Okay, so we will move now on to our first panel, the consumer panel. So if they could come and join me at the front. Whilst they're coming up, we've got Jane Vass, who is Head of Public Policy at Age UK, Kay Blair, who's Vice Chair of the FSA Consumer Panel, and Doug Taylor from Which. So we're going to ask all of our speakers to give us a 3 or 4 minute introduction in the order in which they are on the programme. Just as a word of warning for the panels later on today, I'm going to continue to follow the order that people are on the programme. If you want to work out which which order you'll be speaking in, and so for this panel, we want very much to start in the spirit of how this working group was set off by looking at how this looks from the point of view of the consumer. And Jane, if you want to, whichever you prefer.
Right. Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for inviting us. Indeed, for putting consumers. Panel on first. It's great to be here. And the first thing I'd like to say, I've been asked to say, what does good look like? Well, the first thing that good looks like is a firm underpinning of a decent state pension. So I very much welcome the announcement in the budget, and the Minister and I did not confer beforehand. But now I'd like to actually work backwards. At Age UK, obviously a charity bringing together help the aged and age concern, we see life through the lens of people who've recently retired. And the sorts of things they say to us are, I feel sorry for workers of today. They have private pensions and companies that will be changing with monotonous regularity. They're concerned about their children's future, particularly about their grandchildren's future. And one of the things they tell us is we need to get the message out, it's all about retirement income as well. So looking through the lens of what happens when you retire, I can't stress too much how important it is to get the transitional and the legacy issues sorted as we come up to auto-enrolment. We've got a 15-year window when people's attitudes of people retiring now will affect people's views of auto-enrolment, what they tell their children, what they tell their family. We also hope to see a pension system that is truly accessible to people on low and modest incomes. So we very much welcome the work that's been done around communication. Is the industry ready to talk to people who may not have engaged with pension saving in the past? And in particular, I think employers who may be a bit reluctant, let's face it, to enter the pension savings world and may actually understand very little about it themselves. In this context, Nest is absolutely vital, and we're concerned that it's hamstrung by the cap on contributions and the ban on transfers, and we'd like to see those removed as soon as possible. Returning to one of the themes, uncertainty, we recognise the pension system has got to recognise the fractured working lives that many of people are having. So while the assumption is that in these longer working lives people will be able to pump money into their pension, we hope they do, there will also be some who are scrabbling around to fill the gaps. So the pension system will need to reflect that and consider how people can bridge the gap. In terms of changing behaviour, I mentioned legacy issues, and for us a major legacy issue is that could damage pension confidence is the number of small pots floating around. Returning to the NAPF's research, which they sponsored from the IFS again, recently the paper found there's an estimated 1.2 million DC funds containing less than £5,000 that are no longer being contributed to, collectively worth £2.3 billion. That's an awful lot of money that, if we can get that sorted, it could be a quick win for the people who are coming up to retirement now. So we're very supportive of the government's attention to the small pots issue, but we think it's got to deliver for people who are perhaps not so engaged in pension saving. And also, it's also got to give ensure that the products that people are moving to are good and will actually meet their needs. From that point of view, we're quite supportive of the automatic transfers into a single aggregator or a limited number of aggregators. Elizabeth, I was extremely worried by what you were saying about the amount of capital, and I think possibly this is one of the biggest challenges facing us, because there are, despite the bad press people have had, annuities have had, they are still an incredibly valuable product. And just to give you a quote from the sort of things people say to us are, annuities are a wise decision. Every now and then, the government has to take responsibility. I'm glad they did insist I used it all to buy an annuity. So, obviously concerned about the low rates of annuities in terms of however much you say that actually that reflects good value for money economically. You still got to keep people's confidence in them. And if, although third way products may come up, they... it's how we meet this gap of people coming in with very small savings and what opportunities are available for them where the trivial commutation works. So just to sum up and leave my colleagues to deal with some of the other issues, what does good look like? Well, for us, it extends pension saving, makes sure it's truly accessible to people on low and modest incomes. It's finding a new language to talk to people. For example, somebody said, what is an annuity? People think the government will give them an income. It recognises that people have fractured working lives. It provides a seamless link between accumulation and the decumulation phase. It deals with legacy and transitional issues. And also, it does not. It allows the people who are disengaged, who do not make a specific choice, to get a reasonable outcome from their pension savings. And I hope with that sort of approach, and also focusing on some of the problems that are coming up in the next few years, we can actually build on that, build on the fantastic consensus we see around us, to develop things for a better world for people's grandchildren and children. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Jane. Okay, over to you.
Good morning. I thought initially I would just stay behind the table there, but because I'm only 5 foot tall, I thought perhaps I might disappear. And I'm very glad that the lectern is at this level, because sometimes I get to a stage and find the lectern's here and I have to sort of dodge behind the lectern. So thank you for that. I've been asked to talk also about what good will look like, and I've also been asked to talk about what are the major consumer concerns about pensions, and of course they are numerous. So I'm going to start off with the role of the employee, and I think one of our major concerns is that the employee is seen to be at the bottom of the supply chain. You start off with the fund managers and the platforms and the distributors and the advisors and the consultants and the employer, whose agenda is quite often cost-driven, and way at the bottom comes the employee. I think this lack of engagement by the individual, because they're treated as at the bottom of the supply chain, is really fundamental. You want to get employees engaged, but if you need to have them engaged, you have to treat customers fairly. So I think the workplace is really important. It's a very valuable forum, but it should not be viewed, as it sometimes is, as a cross-selling opportunity to relatively poorly informed employees. So I think the balance of power needs to change to recognise and encourage employees, not as serial defaulters who've been put in an auto-enrolled scheme or as passive members, but as individuals with individual needs. My second key concern is the extent of advice. A bit concerned when I heard, oh, employers don't want to give advice, yet you want to encourage employees to be involved, to contribute more. They need advice, whether it's regulated advice, some sort of generic advice. They need guidance. To an employee, advice is guidance information. It doesn't have to be necessarily regulated advice, but they need help because they have key lifestyle opportunities, key lifestyle events to deal with. I think advice currently is often minimal. That leads to poor outcomes. It's not sufficiently targeted. That leads to poor outcomes. It's too expensive, so it's not accessed. That leads to poor outcomes. It's often at the beginning of the process. But employees need advice on an ongoing basis. they definitely need it when it comes to retirement. And the open market options, there have been various moves. We've had the ABI's code to encourage take-up of the open market option. We're moving in the right direction, but we've got a vastly long way to go. It's not made easy for the employee when they come to decumulate and to take an annuity. I had a letter only last week from a lady who was reasonably savvy. She knew that she wanted to change from her pension provider. She wanted to annuitise with somebody different. Spoke to the administrator to try to get it organised with her current provider. She had seven major obstacles to face in the way of trying to transfer her pension. That is unacceptable. It should happen, and it should happen quickly. So we need to find appropriate ways to get relevant advice to end customers so they can make active and informed decisions. Hidden, complex, high charges, a clear consumer concern. Endless and often meaningless communication full of industry jargon has to stop. Communication has to be targeted, it has to be understandable, and it has to meet consumer needs. What would good look like? How would you improve uptake? How would you engage people? I think, as I said at the very beginning, you treat the employee as a customer with key ongoing needs. You provide pensions with some degree of certainty. You can't really blame consumers if they don't want to engage in pensions if, as the minister said, there are continual future changes. You want pensions that are affordable and offer value for money. The whole process, I think, needs to be simplified so it's not daunting. And I think that absolutely extends to when you're transferring small pots, for instance. You need to simplify the products and the product range. I've heard a great deal of support for annuities. I have to say I'm rather more sceptical about annuities. Maybe the industry could think about some other products, particularly with Solvency II. I sit on the stakeholder group, the insurance stakeholder group at IOPA, and of course there's huge debate about Solvency II and DB pensions, and there's huge debate about Solvency II implications for annuities. You want to get consumers engaged in annuities. Can you wonder that they're sceptical about them? I think you have to enable the consumer to make better choices. You've got to address opaque and excessive charging. I think there was a recent report saying that there were more than 30 separate types of fees that were levied on private pensions in the UK recently. Keep communicating, make it simple. Provide good, affordable advice at key stages. So that might be the fund choice, level of contributions, what to do about transfers, what to do about lump sums, how to annuitise. And improve governance so that governance is actually in the employee's interests and is not governance on behalf of employers. And ensure that there's effective, joined-up regulation, whoever the regulator might be. And definitely have good redress, so if something goes wrong, the consumer can have some confidence. Do all these things, and I think we're a long way on the road to getting a range of good quality, value for money DC pensions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kate. Very clear and ambitious agenda. And finally, Doug.
Well, good morning. I think I'm going to echo the theme that Steve started with in terms of uncertainty, because I think uncertainty is a key issue in terms of consumers and pensions. But I think if I want to emphasise anything this morning, it's that real people with real needs looking for real value has got to be at the core of the pension offering. And real people don't spend all their time talking about pensions. We are a rather rarefied audience here. And I think what's important is to start from the perspective of what real people want, need, and know. I've developed my own 16-point checklist on being a capable pension saver. And I'd be interested at the end whether you can answer yes to all of these questions. How long am I likely to live? What sum of money would I like in retirement? What will my current pension savings deliver? What are my likely future pension savings going to deliver? What will the value of the state pension be at my retirement? What will annuity values look like in 30 years' time? starting on the basis of a 40-year-old? What will the value of other assets I own look like? What is my partner's pension arrangements? What is the impact of inflation on my savings? What are the risks in various investment classes? What are the relative merits of different investment classes? What are the likely trends in asset values? How does compound interest work? What are charges on investments and how do I compare them? What impact do charges have on my pension fund? How will means-tested benefits interact in 30 years' time with my pension? Now, if you can answer yes to all of those questions, then I think you're a very, very sad person. No, I think I think you might be able to be a very engaged pension saver and make very informed decisions. Most people are not going to be able to answer yes to all of those questions. So we should start from the reality of where people are in creating a pension offering. So it's very difficult, I think, for people. And once you start on that basis, I think you have to therefore work out how do we do our best to try and ensure that people make good decisions going forward, and what is good. I mean, we were asked four questions. Question one was, what does good look like? So good to me is one that creates a position that somehow manages those difficult questions that people ask. Second question was, what concerns regularly come up? Currently, people's ability to contribute to a pension is obviously a difficult question, and launching auto-enrolment in the current economic climate is probably not the best time in the economic cycle to do it. But nevertheless, the issue of people's ability to contribute is a perennial point raised in consumer research, because people are present-centred, and they don't see the pension as the high point, the top of their hierarchy of spending. And therefore, their perception of the ability to contribute is an important factor. Consumers look for certainty of returns. They look for guarantees. Extremely difficult, I recognise. But in terms of what consumers worry about, it is that lack of certainty. Security and trust in the vehicles that they invest in. Transparency and a lack of clarity about what terms actually mean. Poor value returns, both in accumulation stage and decumulation stage, and a lack of flexibility. All these difficulties, all these issues, in the context of a lack of understanding, is another undermining factor. So how can we maximise impact? I think it is to make things simple. To make things simple and to use defaults that people can have confidence in. Not to create unnecessary choice. And we know that consumers don't want 200 or 300 different asset classes to invest in. Eliminating disasters, and I worry that some of the issues around consultancy charging could undermine auto-enrolment going forward if there are large amounts of individuals' contributions deducted in the early years of saving. Using plain English, and I think the Nest lexicon is an important factor within that. And we have to recognise that we want to harness inertia, and that's exactly what auto-enrolment does. I think going forward, if we can get to a stage where consumers can answer three questions. What amount do I want to retire on and when do I want to retire? Currently, what amount will I retire on? And thirdly, what can I do about it? If those three questions could be answered, I think we'd have gone an awful long way to trying to ensure we have a better set of outcomes. How we move people from a present-centred position where people are concerned about uncertainty to one where people can, in fact, engage more with their pension savings. Also asked to comment on communications technologies and new engagement strategies. I have no great answer to that, although I did notice DWP research recently, which identified TV as the most current popular way in terms of the way that consumers reflected how they got information on workplace saving. But I'm sure that the new channels of communications will give the opportunity to improve and increase the ability to communicate. But I would caution that if the message is weak, even Simon Cowell isn't going to make that message work through communications. But my final point I'd like to throw out as a challenge, and that is that if in 10 years we reconvene, and if in 10 years we have a discussion, if we see a poor uptake of pensions is the norm, if we see a lack of transparency and trust as a continuing theme, if we see the impact of charges as controversial, then if those things are still on the agenda in 10 years' time, then we will have failed. So to me, part of this process is to try and establish what would good look like, not simply now, but in 10 years' time. And I think that's eliminating those downside issues that I think we're all aware of as we sit here today. Thank you.